Welcome to the Innovate for Impact podcast. This podcast is for leaders in the social sector like you who want to make a difference. Each episode is packed with practical ideas on how you can be more innovative and create an even bigger social impact. We share our ideas on what you can do and also speak to leaders from the sector to share best practice. So let's get into it and let's talk impact. Hi everyone, Dan Bentley here, and I'm joined with not just Tracy Newman, but also Michelle Brahm from Employment Options, and she's going to talk to us a little bit about today around some of the projects she's been running at her organization. But before we do get into it all, Michelle has been very kind to join us from her home in Adelaide, because you had a bit of an interruption there, I believe, this morning, Michelle.
Yeah, it was quite funny, Dan. Tracy said you need to be in a really quiet place, and I'm sitting there and we're getting solar panels putting on our roof, and so all you can hear are drills and grinders and footsteps really loud, and it actually sounded like they're about to fall through the roof. So I had to do the quick mad drive home, hence I'm here.
But you made it.
You made it, and, you know, potentially we might have ended up saving your life if somebody does actually fall through the roof.
Well, I was in another meeting this morning, and that was a RTO, and the guy was going, "I feel really unsafe here. Do you know people do fall through roofs?" And I'm like, "Oh, I hope not."
Definitely hope not. Well, look, it was a real win for green energy today with Employment Options getting some solar panels on the roof, but not for podcasts. So but thanks so much for joining us, and from your comfort of your home too. That's great. So can you just tell everybody that's listening today who you are and what does your organization Employment Options do for the community?
Yeah, sure. Employment Options has been around for about 31 years now, I think. We can trace our roots back to a group of parents who started at Skillshare Day. So I'm not sure everyone knows what Skillshare was, but that was some really targeted employment programs for young people. And I guess it was around that time when unemployment was high. So a group of parents got together, they got some new Skillshare contracts, and eventually kind of morphed into Employment Options. So today we are predominantly a youth-based organisation, and we help young South Australians transform their lives by giving them the skills and confidence to learn, earn and live. And really importantly, the live is an incredibly important part for people. And I think COVID has kind of exacerbated all of that for us, with mental health challenges and social isolation and people having financial distress. So yeah, that's what we're really passionate about, is helping people have a life through work, I guess.
That's really cool. And we've both been lucky enough to come out and visit you on a day there when there wasn't solar panels being installed. But I tell you what, there was a lot of work going on there when we were there. That you have a big workshop on the ground level of your office where you had a whole heap of people that were tinkering and making things and joining in and talking to other members of the community. So you do a lot of that sort of stuff there too.
Fundamental to, I guess, our belief is around experiential learning. So people learn best when they're doing things with their hands and they're really involved. So the people that tend to use our services aren't good at sitting still in a classroom. There's a lot of trauma around that style of learning. So we do a lot of experiential learning where it's really around learning a different way. There's no such thing as a mistake. If you don't finish it, it doesn't matter, because someone else might come along. We use all recycled products, so more sustainability for the environment, and a whole lot of stuff around repurposing push bikes, welding, sort of steampunk welding using old chains and bits and pieces, and pallet furniture. So that's a really important part of our learning programs. And it really starts from, we have a core belief, I guess, that we start where the learner is. And sometimes it's just about making, and it's fun, because that's what people really need to be able to do.
Yeah, that's awesome. And how long have you been the CEO there?
So I have actually been at Employment Options for nearly 15 years, but I haven't been the CEO that long. So I've been September 2017, but I kind of say that I almost really grew up in Employment Options. So I started there coming back from maternity leave, and we'd moved from Darwin down to Adelaide. And I started just doing HR administration. That's like was my background. And it's been a real journey over the last 15 years to be now the CEO. It was not what I expected when I started. So, yeah, it's good. I think it ties everything I love into it. So I've worked a lot in recruitment and HR, but also career development. And I guess that my passion around helping people find the right work fit is really integral, I guess, to a lot of the work that we did. And that's about being able to engage in learning. It's about being well enough mentally to attend and turn up. And I don't know, I feel incredibly blessed that I found employment options, and our former CEO, Leslie, was an incredible teacher to me. And I'm not sure that everyone gets that great experience at work where you just sort of find the place that's good for you.
I think that ties in really nicely to the work that you do. You know, you actually got to experience it, and now you're sort of sharing that and helping other people to experience finding their space and finding the place that they can kind of grow up and flourish.
Yeah, most definitely. And, you know, we've had some young people that have been really isolated from everything for maybe 3 or 4 years. In particular, I think about a young man that didn't leave his bedroom for 2 years. And now, you know, speaking to him, he still comes every week after, I think it's about 3 years. And when I say, why do you still keep coming? He said, I forgot how to talk and I forgot how to be with people. So I never want to forget that again. And I think that stuff is what we do really well in the hustle and bustle of the world, that sometimes people need a place that they can just feel safe and come. And there's a really strong sense of belonging there.
Yeah, wow, that's a powerful story. What a great purpose that you have in the community there too, being able to provide that. We know once somebody has been stuck in the one place for a long time, to get them out of that is extremely hard. And so to be able to get that and then have, 3 years that they've been continually involved in your services, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and I think there's been that real shift over time from recognising that people need a longer period of time, and it's not about codependency or encouraging or creating that more. It's actually about just that time to heal, time and place and space.
Interesting that you're sharing a client story, because I know that you know that story because you actually regularly go out and talk to your clients and find out what's really important to them about your service. So I'm inwardly cheering here at listening to you being able to share these stories, because they're so important, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think, you know, and thank you to you, Tracy, about persevering with me. But we did do a series of interviews with clients and did journey maps, and it was really to help our board understand our client journeys and I guess some of the challenges that our staff experience daily, and that most of our clients have multiple layers of complexity, for another word. So it's not just about not attending school or having a disability, but there's also, you know, financial distress, there's family relationships, there's mental health, there's, I don't know, it's too big, but doing that journey map and mapping people, you can really see those points in our service that make a difference. And where we need to really focus.
That's awesome. So what we wanted to talk to you about today as well, there was a particular program that you ran that's been really successful for your organization called Bizability. Could you tell us a little bit about that, and where did that idea start, and how did that sort of kick off?
Yeah, so some of our work we do is around people living with disability, and in terms of the world of work, there's quite a lot of marginalization that occurs because the way that work is structured, that people have to kind of attend at a certain time and at a certain location. Maybe COVID is actually changing. I just thought of that. COVID's slightly changing that. But there was about equal access into the workplace. And some clients that I'd worked with maybe were older, that had an injury or developed an illness, that they weren't actually able to go back into their normal workplace. So the structure of how for them to then be included in work was really complicated. So you can imagine a man I worked with, he had a stroke in his early 40s. You know, sometimes we think of stroke victim people as older, but he was in his early 40s. And he was a really talented cartographer. He could still do the cartographing. He lost his ability to speak. So his employer was kind of like, oh, you can't work here if you can't talk. You're employed to draw, but you can't work here if you can't talk. And so we started thinking around that. What happens if you have a disability, or what happens if you have an illness and you can't go back to your normal work? And what are all the constraints that exist in the wider community, wider society around that limit your ability to do that? And Sasha, who I work with, you guys knows, he's very passionate about entrepreneurialism. So we started thinking about how could you use design thinking. So like, this man still could draw really well as a cartographer. He had that skill. He just couldn't kind of go to a normal workplace. But how could you take your skill or passion or something that you're really good at and see whether it's a way of self-employment? And then we were really lucky to get a grant through the NDIS, information linkages and something, ILC, which meant we were able to trial the program and deliver it and got to work with Tracy and you, Dan.
Yeah, so you had this idea, but what did you actually create? What did Bizability end up becoming?
Yeah, so Bizability ended up becoming a six-week learning program, which went through the human-centered design process. So part of that was them bringing their idea in and then understanding whether it was a viable product and learning the steps about how you would go to take it to market. The end of the program probably was where you would normally engage with a business consultant or a business manager that would take, if you think of the NIST program, which is a federal government program, that's when you actually have a business plan and you're going to implement your business. This is really the step before that. So even before you're ready to write a business plan, it's actually just getting your idea and seeing whether anyone wants it.
Awesome. What did you find when you were doing this, when you had people going through like your first few cohorts? What sort of stories were sort of coming out the other end of the program?
Yeah, real stories of courage, but also real excitement for the future, that people came in like crocheting or wanting to make soft toys, or there was a whole, someone that had an app, there was a whole different range of things. But it was almost the camaraderie the participants developed between themselves. And I think that's about being isolated and being, you know, and not actually having somewhere to go regularly or people that are all joining in this journey with you. And so that's what I really sensed, was this great joy of being with other people. Yeah. And the other thing we did as part of the program, we used the Connor Davidson resilience scale. So even though it was quite a short program, we wanted to see whether this would actually increase people's resilience and that ability to bounce back after setback, which in entrepreneurialism is a really important feature. And we did find that people did feel more resilient and able to kind of cope with the ups and downs in life a lot easier. And that's about purpose, joining in and having something that they're excited about.
I think that that sense of community really feeds into that as well. So obviously the world has changed a little with COVID, and how did you go building that sense of community? Is that something that is still part of that program, with needing to develop some of it to be facilitated online?
Yeah, because we were right in the middle of delivery when COVID started. So very fortunate to have sure-footed facilitators, Nate and Pete, who actually kind of did convert it to being online. It did make it a little bit different, but I think that kind of time, if you think back to May, June last year, it was a really different time anyway. So in Adelaide, we didn't actually go into complete lockdown. So we had less people in the room, but we actually managed to mix in the room and out of the room at once. I think it brought a whole new dimension and difference to the program, and maybe it was something that people really needed at that time. And that's one of the things I've really noticed about COVID, was it's all kind of tested us in our ability to work online and be much more comfortable in that space. Slightly different, I think, because maybe people didn't meet face to face, but there still was that sense of community. And now with a lot of our participants doing Bizability, they are doing it one-on-one, and that's about having some different needs, I guess, as to why that. And that's when I say that we start where the participant is, and that was really important for us to be able to change that model for people that needed that one-on-one kind of support. I'm still really hopeful that we'll go back to a group-based program, because that brings a whole different element.
I also remember when we spent some time with you there that you had a webcam set up at the back of the room from the start. So this was even before COVID. What was that about? Take us through, what was the insight that you found when you were designing this program that meant that you went and invested in this high definition webcam for all of your sessions? What was that all about?
Yeah, that's actually really good. Thank you, Dan, for that reminder. What we did find was the people that were wanting to attend the program, not all of them could be there weekly or travel or transport themselves into the room. So we did start really early around live streaming it via Facebook, so you could still participate whilst not being in the room. I'd forgotten that. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember it being just something that I thought was really practical but really innovative. And I remember the insight from the notes from the workshops was something around that one of the reasons why people had dropped out of other educational type practices in the past was because they might miss a few sessions and then go, well, now it's too hard for me to get back. So I remember your team sort of thought about, well, okay, how do we then set this up in a way where we're going to get maximum participation. And if you can't get out of bed that day or you can't organize transport, it's not a showstopper. It actually just means that you just go online and then the mentors can come and touch base with you after it and work through the worksheets and all that. I thought that was a really great solution.
Yeah, and that was the empathy workshop we did with Tracy, like brought in so many of those great insights around how do we open up access. And it probably is a real core part of what visibility was. It's kind of leveling the playing field for people. So, yeah, that's the other thing. Maybe post-COVID, you know, employers are going to be more accepting that people aren't going to be physically in an office, you know, and they don't necessarily have to work 9 to 5.
Well, that's probably a good segue for both of you. Do you guys want to take us through this empathy workshop we've spoken about a few times and how did that work and what did you learn from that that informed the design of this successful program?
I should interview Tracy about this.
Yeah, you should. Go for it.
No rules. There's no rules on this.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was interesting, Tracy, because I was like a participant at the workshop and I saw the end result of what you delivered. Can you tell me a little bit about how you came up with that session plan for that?
I'd be happy to. So really what we wanted to do was get a broad range of perspectives about training so that we could make sure that we incorporated as much of what people really need into that program, you know, with the knowledge that you had already applied for a grant and received a grant. So there were some parameters that were already set in place. We knew that it needed to be training and we knew that what the topic of that training needed to be. But what we wanted to do is make sure that the way that it was delivered and the content that was included in that training embraced as many different needs as possible. And obviously the only way to really do that is to make sure you understand what it is that people need. And so the first exercise that we went through was actually just getting people to talk about their previous training experience. And I've got to say, I was blown away, and you probably were as well. Like, some people shared experiences that were so awful. And obviously you can tell I don't have that lived experience. So I guess I naturally assumed that other training providers already had a lot more of this stuff sorted out. You know, there were stories of people, you know, being segregated in the room because the training was delivered in a room that wasn't wheelchair friendly. So, you know, she kind of had to stand at the back. And you know, there were other people talking about, like, there were physical exercises that they were just told they weren't allowed to participate in, even though they personally felt that they were capable of. So that sort of, you know, risk assessment didn't include the perspectives of the people with disability. So that was some of the really good stories that came out.
Something that I never knew was about different wheelchairs have different heights and their arms and things like that. So from the empathy workshop, we actually then went and got the up-down desks so that everyone could sit around a table and not really like, oh, you have to sit at that end because that's the only desk that will be raised up and down. It was like every desk needs to have that capability so you can sit anywhere and still be included instead of, yeah, because that was a real thing I heard, that you have to sit over there because that's where the wheelchair people sit, which is not a really good thing on your first day of a training course when you're not feeling the best or confident anyway.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And then I think the other thing that I really got out of it also was, you know, the broad ranges of people with different types of disability. So, you know, when you have people who, you know, maybe have an invisible disability, you know, I guess their needs are totally different from somebody with a physical disability where people can sort of see that. And even for me, I had a participant during the workshop just actually get somewhat overwhelmed, and really just being able to sit there and listen and just give him that moment to sort of take some space and some time was really beneficial. And I know that I learned a lot for myself in terms of, you know, pace and timing and language and all of those things that I was able to incorporate as well, just to make sure that it's far from a one-size-fits-all type of approach that needs to happen.
And it really is, when we talk about accessibility, how it's not just almost the physical space, it's also the way that training's delivered. And I remember we were looking for a venue to hold the workshop, and there was a pub down the road, and they're like, no, yep, they say that they're accessible, you know, all access is good. But the only way that you could access into the training room was to go around the back, through the kitchen, down the corridor, past the toilets, through the storeroom, and then you could get into where we all sat. And that was like, oh, well, yeah, it's accessible, but everyone else came through the front door. Those little things you just don't actually realize always. Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah.
So I'll just come back now.
I know. It was a few years ago now, wasn't it? It's gone fast.
Yeah, it has gone fast.
You've had a fair few people go through the program, I think, too, yeah?
Yeah, I would say it's up over 100 people now. So it is quite
amazing.
Quite.
That's really cool.
Significant. So true. And then I guess the next part of that empathy workshop was actually dealing with the content. So because we were allowing people to explore self-employment, and we knew that there would be quite a few people who were younger who'd never really had any type of experience with self-employment, and we wanted to get to the bottom of, well, what did people already think when we talked about, you know, starting a business? So you get a lot of messages about 9 out of 10 small businesses fail in their first year. You know, all of those stats get given to people. And sometimes there's also that other mindset of, you know, you just got to grind it out and work 80 hours a week. And if you could imagine looking at that from the perspective of somebody who, you know, has health needs and specialist appointments and all the rest of it, it wouldn't necessarily feel accessible. So we asked people to share what they knew about operating a business and also what resources they were already aware that were able to provide them with assistance. Because again, we didn't want to duplicate services or anything that people already knew and were comfortable using, but making sure that we were sort of filling those gaps. Are you looking for innovative ways for your organization to deliver more impact? Take our online assessment and receive a customized report in your inbox that highlights exactly what to do next. It takes only 5 minutes to fill out and it's completely free. Visit impactoconsulting.com.au/self-assessment.
What did we learn from the question around, you know, what do people know about business? What did you find from that when you did the empathy workshops, and what did you do differently with the content then to ensure that it met their needs?
Tracy?
I'll go. Yeah.
I was looking at Tracy.
We're all looking at you, Tracy.
I think what it was actually about making sure that we framed this up as giving people an opportunity to explore self-employment. We didn't want to frame this up as, you know, do this course and start a business. Because as Michelle will be able to say, a lot of people who actually go through this program actually at the end of it go, wow, that was really interesting and I learned something. I learned something really important about myself, and I also learned that I don't want to have a small business. I want to go and study and then I want to be employed by somebody else. You know, so it's really about giving people the opportunity to explore something and help them get to the end point that was right for them, not necessarily framing this up as, you know, you get to be an entrepreneur and you get to have this amazing business, because it really came through in there that what that looks like is so very diverse in terms of what people want and what they'd heard. And one of the things that came out was how much people who we didn't think really had anything to do with self-employment already knew. And my favorite example is the gentleman who had the chickens that hatched eggs, and he doesn't actually sell them. He supplies them all to charity. But, you know, everything he knew, you know, he knew about what he needed to feed the chickens and how many eggs he'd expect. Like, so he knew so much about running a business. And yet I think on the outside looking in, you know, he was young and pretty carefree, and I wouldn't have picked him as being somebody who was all over business to the degree that he was. So that was the other thing that really came out, that sometimes people have a whole lot more knowledge and experience. They're sitting on all this value, and it is actually just about helping them to uncover that.
You know, that's really interesting. So he actually has more chickens now, and he has started breeding them. So not only are they providing a lot of charities with eggs, he's actually has started selling his chickens for income. But that was only recently that that's happened. So I think the other thing around visibility, like, there was no expectation at the end that you had to start a business. This was really like a making an informed decision about, is that something that you wanted to do? And a lot of those entrepreneurial programs and things, they actually start at the point of, that's where I want to be. I want to own my own business. And people don't get the time to explore and kind of work out, is that something that they really want to do? So sometimes I think they start the process only to find, yeah, I'm expected to work 80 hours a week or everyone fails or whatever it is. And kind of having worked that out before brings a lot of benefit to people, because it doesn't become a negative learning experience, because at the end you go, oh, I found out a whole lot about myself. I know about human-centered design. I feel so much better. I've made friends. And I've just ruled out this thing that was always on my mind that that could be something I'm going to do.
Yeah, I remember we were lucky enough to come in and visit your first cohort, I think, that went through it. I remember sitting there speaking to one particular lady and she was really young. I think she was only like 22 or something, and she had done all this training in being a beautician and a hairdresser and all these different things, and she had rocked up to this course with the idea that she was going to choose one of those to go and do her own business on. And I think in like week two, she goes, you know what? I don't want to do any of that. I want to be a musician. I've always known it and I've just never had the guts to do it. But now I've got the guts to do it. So I'm going to use the rest of this program to come in here, hang out with these people and just write my music. And I've already written like six songs. And I loved that story.
Yeah, I remember that. And she'd been doing it for years but never thought about it as something that she could do as a job. Yeah. There was another really great story, and it was one of the later programs. A lady came in and she'd had kind of like really negative work experiences at work, and she was a skilled migrant to Australia and it wasn't what she expected. So then she kind of, it was suggested to her that she do visibility, and she's, I don't know. You know, self-employment, I don't know if it's for me, but went through the program. And then at the end, she realized through the human-centered design problem, there was nothing actually wrong with her. It was actually that she didn't understand the Australian workplace culture. She didn't know the rules of engagement. She didn't know all the subtext that happens. And so using human-centered design, she found out all the things that we take for granted. She found that out. Like, and I think one of the stories she told me was someone asked if they could borrow her stapler, and she said no. And people were like, why not? You know, it became a really big thing. And she's like, well, it's mine. Like, I don't want to share it. But in Australian, you go, oh, yeah, here. You know, so it's just those really, really subtle different rules that if you're from a different culture, you don't get. But using that visibility, she worked out that she did want to work. She just needed to learn the rules.
Mm. Is there anything that you would do differently if you were to do the program again?
I think we do all this really great work and you get the funding to do it, and you get lots of support from your referring agencies and your partners. But when it comes to the end of programs, it's always about that sustainability. And I think that probably I would do more time thinking about how we could make things sustainability once the funding ends. And in one way, we did start doing that. So the people who are doing visibility now are doing it through their NDIS funding, through innovative community participation. That's always, I think, the challenging with any funding is that you get to the end and then how do you sustain it? And we kind of went back to all the people who had referred, and they're like, oh, yeah, we don't have any money to pay. And that's what's really hard. So they completely valued the program. They really want it continued. How does it become sustainable ongoing? It's always my regret.
No, that's good. But I mean, look, it is, the good news is it is still going, which is good. So you did get there. And I think one of the things that I would absolutely say is a real credit to you and your team is, because we obviously talk to you a lot and we get to hear updates of what's happening. I think one thing that you've done is that you've kind of continuously evaluated this as you go, and you and your team have been able to iterate the program as COVID came in. As you know, you had to get funding from the participants rather than from the grant. You've been able to sort of iterate as you go too. So I think that's another really important thing that is a great credit to your team's execution on that.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. Yeah. And it kind of goes with the territory about the people who are working in those programs, because they are naturally really curious and wanting to know how things can be better and how to improve it, and kind of not satisfied with just keeping things the same. So, yeah. It is really good to see.
Yeah, I got to say, you did a really amazing job in finding Pete and Nate, who are this amazing, unlikely duo, but work together really, really well and were really good fun to work with in creating this program as well, and gave, you know, lots of really important feedback along the way and asked for lots of things, and could see that real curiosity and how do we make this better was evident, you know, before the program even started being delivered. So it doesn't surprise me that every time they deliver it, they're like, okay, what's next? How can we improve on this?
Yeah, absolutely. And we were really lucky to have them as part of the program. And I think just their backgrounds, but their qualifications and, yeah, their passion just to help people, that entrepreneurial space, make it accessible for lots of people. Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, that's great. Last question is, if there's people like yourself, Michelle, who are listening to this thinking, wow, this sounds amazing and I'd love to do something like that in my organization, where would people get started?
I guess that it's about thinking about what the problem is that they want to solve and is probably needing to solve the right problem. So there's a whole lot of things out there, but it's really about what is it that you want to solve? And I think then working backwards, like what does research say? What are participants saying? What are the people who are experiencing that problem? What are their blockages or challenges? And also from maybe an organisation, what could we create to help them solve? And I think that's something our organisation does really well, is that we know what the learning could be and what the solution could be, but it's actually about how do you engage people? So it's that bridge. And I think that's the first kind of thing, is like with visibility, it was about people's access to work and what would be a viable solution. But I can think of some other examples as well. So that would be, I guess, where I would start. What is it that you're trying to solve?
Yeah, and just getting really clear on that before you dive in.
So often we're so quick to solve the problem that we don't actually stop and take that time to make sure, you know, am I actually solving the right problem? Because there are hundreds of different solutions to any problem, but, you know, the best solution in the world to the wrong problem isn't the solution that you need. You actually need the solution to the right problem, and not just the symptoms of the problem, but the actual root cause of that problem.
Yeah. And I think that the empathy workshop you did, Tracy, you know, about all that sort of stuff really made our program so much better, because without that learning, we would have just barreled ahead probably. And, you know, I think maybe the content would have been okay. We had a really good idea about content, but it was actually about how do people get in and how are they included was so important. And I think that's what made visibility really different.
Yeah. And the other thing too, I think, was that wasn't only just that you did the empathy workshop, but it was the people that you invited. Like, you looked at it from a system perspective. And I think that was another thing that made it successful from the start, was that you didn't just have people with lived experience, which is obviously what we want, but you also had who are their carers, like who are the people that run them around to things, who are the plan managers that are going to need to at some point recommend this program. You had experts that are service providers in the local area that would have an insight. You're able to really bring together different representatives from the community to get a real 360 and systemic view of the challenge that you're trying to solve, rather than a very narrow view of just a few people's perspectives. I think that was another great thing that you did too.
And a lot of those people that were at that, like the referrers that were at that workshop, were really, really strong supporters. So I think there was probably a lot of value in bringing people in really early and them feeling they had a strong sense of ownership. So they felt confident to refer their participants in.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Well, hey, thanks so much for spending some time out of your busy day and for commuting across the city of Adelaide and having us in your lovely lounge room for this podcast. We really appreciate that, Michelle, and keep up the good work that you and the team are doing at Employment Options.
Oh, no, thanks, Dan and Tracy. It's always a pleasure to talk to you guys.
Cheers.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Innovate for Impact podcast. Any links to what we spoke about today will be posted in the show notes. If you'd like to know more about social innovation, visit our website, where we have a heap of tools to help you on your way. Visit impactoconsulting.com.au. Thanks for listening. Now go out there and make an impact.